This is Morning Edition on Interlochen Public Radio. Good morning, I'm Tom Kramer. Many Hall of Famers have written memoirs about their lives in baseball, but one has told his story in a more expressive way. Here's IPR's Brad Aspey.
For many, spring in Michigan means camping, cherry blossoms, and fishing. And for more than 40 years, it meant listening to this man.
Right-hander against the right-hander. The outfield is straight up and deep on Fielder. He is the DH today. Swing, there's a drive to left. That one is long gone.
Since Ernie Harwell stopped calling Detroit Tiger games in 2002, we've only been able to hear his voice in bits and pieces, either in baseball documentaries or rebroadcasts of classic plays. But now, thanks to a 4-CD set called Ernie Harwell's Audio Scrapbook, fans of the game can enjoy hearing Ernie tell his story in his own voice.
Ty Cobb, I heard that Ty was coming down to his hometown, Royston, and I decided it might be good if I went down there and interviewed him. And the people at WSB, the executives, didn't like the idea too much. They said, well, he's a mean old man, and he's not going to talk to a kid announcer like you, but if you want to go, go ahead. So we took this engineer on the truck, took the big console down there to record, and I went up to Cobb's residence, and he came to the door. He was very pleasant. Said, come on in. We sat down there on the sofa, and the 15-minute show was completely filled with Ty Cobb. I had no problem at all with him. He was very hospitable. He was very cordial and very warm to me. And I made a
Ernie also provided the scrapbook with plenty of tape from his days of calling games. Many of those clips feature Ernie delivering some of the signature calls that fans waited to hear again and again.
There's a breaking ball in for a strike, and he stood there like the house by the side of the road and watched it go by. Struck him out. That's the third strikeout for Holliday.
The major portion of the more than three-hour scrapbook is a conversation between Ernie and another sportscaster, Bob Harris.
This was not going to be a Bob interviews Ernie type project. It was going to be two baseball fans sitting on a couch talking baseball.
Down toward the box seats, right by the Yankee dugout. Babe Ruth was playing right field when the inning was over. He came in, and as he approached the dugout, I got up at the railing, and I shouted to him, and I said, Mr. Ruth, can I have your autograph? And I was so stupid, I didn't have anything for him to sign. He said, well, kid, you ain't got anything for me to sign on. I said, well, I've got a pen, and then I stuck my tennis shoe over the railing, and I said, well, will you please sign my shoe? So Babe Ruth signed my shoe.
Ernie talks about his introduction to sports media by landing a job with the Sporting News. He also talks about recreating baseball games before many stations could afford the technology to broadcast from the ballpark. A telegrapher would actually send Morse code to Ernie's booth, and he would relay the information to listeners as if he was actually at the park. For the sound of hits, Ernie would simply smack a ruler on his desk. Before going to Detroit to call Tiger games, Ernie announced for the Brooklyn Dodgers. He was there when Jackie Robinson made history by joining the Dodgers and becoming the first African-American to play in the major leagues. Before that first game, the Ku Klux Klan wrote a letter to the Dodgers and threatened to shoot Robinson from the stands if he played.
Well, the Dodgers got to Atlanta for the first game, and Bert Schotten's the manager. And he reads the letter to his players, and he says, you're going to take the field, and you're going to play. After the threat, they needed a little comic relief. Gene Hermansky, the good-humored outfielder, said, why don't we all wear number 42, Jackie's number, and then they won't know which guy to shoot. Then when they got on the field, Pee Wee Reese, his Keystone partner, told Jackie, said, move over a little to your right, Jackie. This guy might be a bad shot, and I don't want to get hit.
The rest of the scrapbook steers clear of most negative issues, such as astroturf and steroid use. The producer wanted listeners to feel as good as they did when they listened to Ernie live back in the day. And, of course, Ernie didn't forget talking about 1968, the year the Tigers won the World Series when the city of Detroit seemed to need it most.
Well, it was a great factor in the healing of the city because people could root for a black guy or a white guy or a purple guy or a green guy or whatever if he was a Tiger. and they all forgot about the other stuff. And I think another factor in the whole scheme of things was that the newspapers had gone on strike around Thanksgiving of 1967. So there was no print coverage of the Tiger 68 season at all until maybe mid-August. So they got through almost the whole season without any newspapers. And that put the emphasis on radio and on TV. So people could be in a car next to a guy, and he'd be listening to the radio, and they'd say, well, how are the Tigers doing? Or you could walk through the neighborhood, hear the ball game, or you could see TV.
Today, Ernie Harwell suffers from late-stage cancer. He was diagnosed in September. He's changed his telephone number and is only in contact with his family. The producer of the audio scrapbook, Gordon Miller, keeps apprised of Ernie's condition through Ernie's daughter. The last he heard, Ernie takes walks around his home and remains upbeat. As Miller said, he's the same old Ernie. For Interlaken Public Radio, I'm Brad Aspie.
Yes, Jackie, hit that ball.
Some kids bat, the crowd went wild because he knocked that ball a solid mile. Yeah, boy.
Yes, Jackie, hit that ball. Satchel Paige is mellow, so is Campanello, Newcomb and Dobie too. But it's a natural fact, when Jackie comes to bat, the other team is through.
Did you see Jackie Robinson hit that ball? Did he hit it? Yes, and that ain't all. He's no home.
Yes, Jackie's real gone. Jackie's real gone. Jackie is a real gone.